For those of you that don't know, if you're new here today, I don't know, I don't recognize all your faces, but maybe you've been here for 3 months. I've been gone for 3 months, and so for a while I've had some level of apprehension about what do you say when you've been gone for 3 months. I'm supposed to like catch you all up real fast. And then part of my deal is like I'm not nervous standing up in front of big crowds of people, except when it's talking about me. I'd much rather be opening a text this morning and saying, let's talk about that thing and this idea rather than let's talk about me. And so that's really uncomfortable. I'd rather not. I'd rather keep that stuff on my blog or out there somewhere. So so when we started getting here, we decided a couple weeks ago, I was talking to Dustin and decided that maybe the better way to do this would be to do it via interview format. So Eric's going to interview me. And just ask questions, and if we can keep it quick, he'll even let you guys ask questions. And while he's coming up, we're just going to kind of muddy our way through the slides. I have a handful of slides. We didn't even get to them all last time. I'll get to what I get to and what I don't. And so I just want to say up front, like when Vicky Brown was the one who probably about a year ago first started talking about sabbatical, and I think my first response was, eh. And then it was like, oh, that sounds really cool. And then as it got closer, I got really scared about it. And then... But it's just been a great experience. And so I guess what I want to say without using too many words is just thank you all for giving me the opportunity to go away 3 months and to do some of the things that I'm going to tell you about here in a minute. And so thank you. And I'll let Eric, we'll get to other stuff.
Hey, before we get to this, you may have noticed that there's someone who's normally here on Sunday morning, and he's not here, and his wife isn't here either. And they've been going hard at it for the past 3 months. So Dustin, because of that, we're giving him a sabbatical of 3 days. So, but if you see Dustin next week, just love on him, man, because he just serves so well. Extra meetings, extra energy, extra whatever. And he really filled in a lot of gaps when Charlie was gone. So we praise God for Dustin. So make him aware of that, I guess. So we're going to do an interview, and I think what I want to do is start with, you were gone for 90 days, and what we want to know is, what did you miss about us?
Well, let's start by talking about you. I said on the blog post, it's hard, when you get to get up every day, and there was... Let me start over. There was one day on my sabbatical where I heard the two youngest boys, I heard their bus coming up the road at like 3 o'clock, and I hurried and ran to the closet so the boys wouldn't see me in my pajamas that I was wearing when they left for school, because I thought that would be embarrassing to have my kids still see me in the same pajamas. And there's a sense in which, like, if that could be my life every day for the rest of my life, I'm pretty cool with that. Like, pajamas are the most comfortable clothes I own. And so I'm pretty cool with, like, reading and writing and, you know, that kind of stuff from home. So that isn't the part that I missed, you know. Like, but what I missed mostly was just, like, really great conversations with you all. And not just conversations over coffee or beer or lunch or breakfast, but conversations where... this one. Like, I feel like every Sunday, what I'm thinking about this space is that it's a conversation starter, that we start a conversation here that goes on. And so that's what I miss, is those conversations that are started here and ongoing or about your lives and those kinds of things. So that's, I really miss that.
It's good. And we miss it too. Although we had some conversations after some messages over your sabbatical. But we won't talk about that. So... let's talk about family. About sabbatical and family, because it was intentional. It was August, September, October.
Yeah.
And August, kids are not in school
yet. Yeah, so for the first 2 weeks of sabbatical, my kids were out of school. So we were pretty intentional that was just family time. Part of, for me, the sabbatical journey, there's a lot of things I could say about where I was leading into sabbatical, but one of the things is that we just needed some space as a family. And so the first couple weeks, I think we mostly went to the pool and weeded the yard. That was a 3-day project. There was a lot of weeds. And those kinds of things, just being a family together. And so that just gave us space to do good things. I have two pictures about just my space in sabbatical with family. The first is a picture of Caleb's torso making naan. because I like to cook. Like, a big part of our life as a family is dinner and food, and I love having my boys in the kitchen with me, like, helping. And so I made chicken tikka masala. I'd never made Indian food at my house because that's, you know, you do that wrong and your house smells bad for a long time. And so then I decided last thing, like, let's make naan. Why not? And so then this is Caleb making naan in our kitchen. And it's just, that's a symbol to me of goodness with our family when we have time to cook and try things together and experiment and laugh and music playing and then sitting at a dinner table and hearing about their day at school and all that stuff. So it's really good. And then the other family type thing is I did a lot of running while I was gone. A couple weeks ago I ran the River City Half Marathon. And this is me running with my brother. My brother is skinny and he's been a runner since high school and a fast runner. And I just recently started running, so the fact that I can even hang with him at any level running is really great. And so that was just a great – we ran side by side the whole race. And so we were aiming for a 7:30 pace, and we were 7:38, which is fine because both of us, our training was not so good towards the end. So we were aiming for 8 that morning, and then it was just a really crisp, awesome morning to run. And so it was just nice. And so that I love that picture of just the two of us. We talked the whole time and laughed and had it was awesome.
Great. So part of the 90 days was some travel as well. And so both out of the country and also within the United States. So yeah. Let's share about one of those.
So kind of real quick. There was 4 times I left home for longer periods of time. One, I went out to Portland with my friend. He had a plane. He needed to fly back, a small plane to fly back across the country. So I went back and did that. So that was flying across the Rockies in a small plane is scary. And so it was a lot of us yelling at each other about where we were on the map because, well, long story. So that was just a little fun little adventure. And then I went hiking in the Shawnee National Forest with Justin Ganshaw. Many of you know Justin. So this is us on that's me on the trail. By the way, Illinois is really cool. Who would have known? How many of you have been to the Garden of the Gods down in Shawnee? Okay, the rest of you should go to the Garden of Gods in Shawnee. It is, you will not, like, if you just woke up and opened your eyes, you would have no idea that you're in Illinois. It's the best part of our state, the part that doesn't look like the rest of it, right? Like, so we had a great time on the trail. I'm going to tell you the longer story about how Justin Need Forest rescued later this day. We ended up having to call in 911 to haul him out of the forest. So I'll tell you that whole story later. I want him to be in the room when I tell that story. But that was really great. We were supposed to go 4 days, 80 miles, and we did 2 days, 37 miles, and then, again, ambulanced out of there. And then just a couple weeks ago, I went to Minneapolis, which we're going to come back to. But in the middle of all that, the big trip is I was just a cool opportunity that I got to go with an organization called Love 146 to Cambodia, Thailand, and the Philippines. And I've shared in here about Love 146. They're an organization that is trying to stop childhood exploitation. I think that's their tagline, something along those lines. And so what they were doing is taking us to Cambodia, mostly to see the partner work that they do in Cambodia. Real quick, the history of Cambodia, in the late 1970s, Pol Pot and his Khmer Rouge killed a quarter of the country. I mean, just think about that. A quarter of the people dead. Everybody you talk to in Cambodia, you can ask them about Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge, and either they fought against him, or they had family members, or, like, they know somebody. They were there. Like, our tour guide at Angkor Wat, he fought against the Khmer Rouge, and he was injured, and he had to be, like, was in the jungle for months recovering, and became a Christian because he encountered missionaries who nursed him back to health. I mean, it's just amazing that this is in their lifetime. And so when you have a country that went through that kind of genocide, and we went and visited Tul Sang, which is this prison where Pol Pot, 20,000 people went in, only 7 people survived Tul Sang. It was a school that was converted into a place where they just massacred people. We went to the killing fields. Some of you know that kind of story of the killing fields. There was a movie. It was I think it won the Academy Award. And so it was just a really intense trip. And so when you have that kind of situation, you have people that are vulnerable. And when you have people that are vulnerable, there are people that will exploit vulnerabilities, especially the vulnerabilities of children. And so the trip was pretty heavy, talking about how do girls find themselves, and boys too, but how do girls and boys find themselves in positions where they are stuck in the sex trade, and how can you help them out? And so really, you can feel it here, like the intensity of those experiences. We went to Bangkok and walked into the red light districts where you literally see teenagers, young teenagers standing on stages, barely wearing anything and wearing numbers, and you just pick a number. Like that kind of thing, you can walk into Nana Plaza in Bangkok tonight and it's happening. Well, actually, it's night there right now. It's happening right this minute. And so the intensity of that experience, really heavy, really intense. And then one of the things Love 146 does is they have this thing called the round home. They have two homes, the white home for boys and the round home for girls. And it's for children that have been rescued out of brothels, out of whatever situation they were in. Some of them even pimped out by their own parents kind of things. Horrible, horrible situations. And it's basically an orphanage for these kids. And so we arrive, and they've got this place decorated for us because they're so. The organization does not take very many visitors there because they don't want the children to feel like they're being showcased, you know. And so only about once a year do visitors come in from the outside. And so we were there, and they had prepared a program. They've been learning instruments and songs, and that's part of their recovery is learning, you know, things like that. And so we got there, and they took us all over the facility and showed us their goats and their quail, and I think they had chickens, and they have a catfish pond, and they're teaching the kids how to, like, garden. They have gardens and all this stuff, and it was just super great. And the kids are just so full of joy, and they grab your hand and take you everywhere they go. And so then we went back to our tables, and they started doing this performance for us, and it was just this beautiful. I was in tears. Like, we were all of us just, like, tears all night long because it's just so. I said to the guy that was leading the trip, I'm like, I think that this is what redemption looks like. And you watch these kids, and at one moment you're thinking, like, the hells that these kids have seen in their lives. And then in the next, like, then you just see their smiles and their joy and their enthusiasm and their life. And you just think, because of the work of people who've given to this organization, these kids are on a better trajectory. Like, their lives, it's the redemption of all things. Like, not to be cheesy, but, like, this is, I think, what heaven is supposed to be. The idea of heaven is this right here. This is heaven. This is what redemption looks like. And so then after dinner, we ate dinner with the kids, and then after dinner, they started replaying the last song of their performance, which is this high-energy kids' worship song. And all of us started joining in, and so it was us and the staff and the kids all dancing together. And then I picked up a guitar and started playing with some of the boys. And then I got a banderia, which is the Filipino. It's kind of like a ukulele. And this picture is, this is Jasmine. She's 9 years old. And she taught me to play Twinkle Twinkle Little Star on the banderia. And the two of us sat there and played together. And it was just, I have another picture that I can't share because it shows her face. But she has her hands on mine, putting my fingers on the right notes. So she could teach me to play. And then we finished. And she doesn't really speak English, but we sang Twinkle Twinkle Little Star together. And that, to me, is such a symbol of hope. And that even in the darkest times, like, there's redemption in this world. Like, there's things that are being put back to right. And despite everything we saw all that week, there's this place in Manila where there's these little girls that they have hope that they did not have before they got here. And it's just really, really beautiful. Like, I just keep saying, this was one of the most beautiful nights of my life. And I don't, even still, I stumble. I don't even know how to put into words for you how just magical and beautiful it was.
That's awesome.
So let's go towards, so you're on sabbatical. You have a lot of time to yourself. You are probably reading a lot during that time. So
I lost my little.
Let's do some books.
I have a little notebook that I kept track of things from sabbatical. I think I left it on my desk or somebody lifted it from me. But I read 19... Oh, there it is. Ha ha. I have my little book of sabbatical thoughts and ideas that a couple of my friends, I've given it to them to read, and they've humored me. But at the back of it, because I make lists like this, I have a list of all the books I read, which is this page and this page. So my report is I read 19 books on sabbatical. Here's the part I'm really proud about. 11 of them are fiction and 2 are poetry. So I only read like 6 grown-up books the whole time. But I love novels, and so I was catching up a little bit on my New York Times bestseller books that I should have read and haven't, and so like The Alchemist, but these two are my 2 favorites. If I had to pick 2 favorite novels that I read, anybody read either one of these? The first service? Nobody.
Both of them are in my book
club. Oh, really? So you've read both of them? All the Light We Cannot See. If you're looking for a great novel, that one is just gorgeous. I mean, I don't like to spoil novels for people, so all I can tell you is it's just a beautiful, beautiful novel. And The Goldfinch is really, really good, too. It's a little bit longer and a little bit more intense, but oh, my gosh, that book, so good. I think I got in trouble with Jennifer because I got a little obsessed about it for a couple days. She's like, I just feel like you're just in your Kindle all the time. I'm like, I can't stop reading it. All right, sorry. Nobody's connecting with this. Move on. We'll have a moment later about it. And then these three books were really kind of impactful to my journey along the way. On the far right is Brené Brown's Rising Strong. It came out the first week I was on sabbatical. And I'm going to come back to this in just a minute. She's been just really influential in my life, period. But this idea of Rising Strong and the rumble, it's about like when you've fallen down or you feel like you're in bad places, how do you get back up? And it's just been so, so good to me. And I've been vlogging about that some. I'm a huge fan of Elizabeth Gilbert. You may really hate Eat, Pray, Love. A lot of people do. But I love her. And so this is her book about creativity. And I absolutely love her book. And I'll refer to her in a little bit. And then the last one, does anybody know Joseph Campbell? Nobody in the first service did. So like two of us. Yes. Three of us total. Joseph Campbell is awesome. He has changed how I think about so much. I call him Joey Cams because we're tight. He's dead. But basically, the idea is the monomyth, that the stories that we tell in movies, in books, in our own lives, we're all telling the same story over and over again. That Star Wars, like Luke Skywalker, is the same story as Frodo Baggins, is the same story as Katniss Everdeen, is the same story as pick whatever story you love. And it's the hero story. It's about the hero who's discontent at home, goes out into the world, has to learn some things, and become a different kind of person so he or she can come back and rescue his or her people, right? Like that's, I just summarize like most movies, most plots. And when they deviate from that, we hate these shit movies. You know, like nobody wants the bad ending where the hero goes out and gets killed by the dragon. The end. That's not a movie, right? That's a terrible movie. And so that's just been really, in my thinking about faith, that this book, you're going to hear a lot more about this book in the future because it's just been really influential on how I think about the faith journey in which we all see ourselves as a hero. And we should, that we're on our journey, that there's places where we were discontent before, and now we have to go out in the world and fight the dragons, and we become a different kind of person so that eventually, once we fight the dragons, we get to come back and cleanse the Shire. You know, like that kind of idea. We get to come back to our people and bring gifts and goodness. And so it's really, really great. So those are three of my favorite books, or five of my favorite books.
Awesome.
So.
Yeah, and we look forward to, in the future, just hearing more and more.
Oh, yeah.
As, you know, a sermon, you know, mm-hmm. happens and, you know, you might refer to these things. And
yep.
That's exciting.
Yep.
So I think, so 90 days, it's a long time.
Yeah.
What was maybe sort of like the most surprising thing that you, oh, I didn't expect that, or maybe something that was so surprising it might have been overwhelming, so that kind of thing.
Well, you all know I like to chart and graph things, right? So I made a chart. He gave me some of these questions I know in advance. So this is my chart of sabbatical season for me, all right? And let me explain it. So 3 months, at the beginning was family time, I talked about that. Then the big red chunk was running, writing, rumbling. I'll talk about rumbling in just a minute. And then the last part, October, is when I was traveling a lot. And then this is the state of my soul kind of like across the bottom. Jennifer describes my first couple weeks of sabbatical as me being agitated. And I was like, what do you mean by that? She's like, I don't know. Just, you were agitated. You were complaining. You're a little grouchy. You just couldn't settle down. And we were talking about this in the first service, like, cause you had the experience of sabbatical a year ago. And, when you're a person that's like really driven and like you like to get things done and you like accomplishing, cause I do, I find great satisfaction in accomplishing, not just for you all, but for me, like I get a lot of satisfaction. It's kind of hard to go into that other gear of like, not accomplish. And so, I look back now and I see how I was agitated. At the time, if she would have said it, I would have just snapped at her. See that? See what I did there? And then the bigger section, there's a long section in the middle where I was, just to be frank, I'm pretty much an extrovert, and I was pretty lonely. A lot of loneliness, but increasingly okay. And I'm going to come back to that rumbling and increasingly okay. The last part, I was listening to a guy named Pete Holmes. He's a comedian. He has a podcast. And he was interviewing Weird Al. Yes, Weird Al spoke deeply into my sabbatical. And Weird Al told Pete Holmes this. He said, every day I wake up, and I say to myself, today, I get to hang out with Weird Al. How cool is that? Said Weird Al. And for me, I'm going to share a little bit about this in just a second. But for me, that idea of waking up in the day and saying, I get to spend today with Charlie. That's good. I'm happy to hang out with Charlie today. For a raging extrovert, some of you are like, what's the big deal about that? for me, it was a really big deal to do that. And I'm not perfect at it yet. I'm still a work in process. About halfway through the sabbatical, I sent kind of an update to a few people in the leadership here and some of my friends and my folks. And I sent them a picture of, it's called The Temptation of St. Anthony. And it's a copper plate engraving. It's been redone by, several people have redone it. Michelangelo redid this. And it's, actually, I should have put the Michelangelo, if it would have been clearer. But St. Anthony's a nun, a desert father, or he's a nun. St. Anthony was a monk, and he was kind of known for being so serene. And so these are all his demons. My favorite demon that he has is the one on the left with the crazy nose. I don't know how that's scary to anybody. But he's being, like, his beard's being ripped at, his clothes are being torn at, he's being held by the hand by the one. And in the middle of all that, he's serene in the middle in that. And for me, I think for all of us, we all have our demons, right? Some of them are demons of like our past or the voices inside our head. In Buddhism, they call it the monkey mind. The things that start chattering when I get quiet about you're not this and you're not this and you're not your sister. You know, like that kind of thing in our heads. And some of these are, I don't want to say that the demons are people, but sometimes the demons represent people in our lives that have said things that wound us, and the demons just keep repeating those things in those places we hurt. And Brené Brown says that when something difficult happens, the people who can get back on their feet are the ones who can name what happened inside of them. That's what a good therapist does, is help you to name what's happening inside of you. Because you remember that story where Jesus heals the one guy who's possessed, and Jesus starts by naming the demon? His name is Legion. There's something about naming our demons that puts them in their place. Does that make sense? That there's something about going inside and saying, okay, I need to go back through that thing. And again, this is what good therapy does. Go back to your childhood and talk about the event where, because we need to go back through it so that we can name, this is what happened inside of me. And for me, a big part of this journey over the last couple months has been going back inside of myself and trying to name what's been happening in me in the last couple years. And so, and some of that's pretty personal stuff. Some of it's stuff I've shared with other people, and I will along the way. I'll share one of those for me. There's this, this is from Daniel Lapointe. Yeah, you know this. This has been on my desktop for 2.5 months. The unworthy is a lie. Part of what I've shared in this journey here, I've shared this with you at different times, is I think it's rooted in how I've always viewed God. Jennifer and I were just talking about this yesterday, about how I've always, when I picture God, God is angry or disappointed. Almost always in my life, it vacillates between if he's not angry, he's disappointed with me. If he's not disappointed, it's angry. And I've had a really hard time. One of those demons for me is getting to this place where, oh, God loves me. Yeah, technically he has to because he said he would. But to the place, for me, the language that I use is that God actually likes me. That when God thinks of Charlie, God's heart warms and he's like, oh, yes. And so that's been a really hard, hard spiritual journey for you. And I know some of you come by that easily, and I'm so envious. I know at this point in my life that there's probably things that I get that you struggle with, okay? All right. So this is my thing. And so thinking about Brené Brown and naming that demon and saying that's something I really struggle with. And then I was listening to, I think it was Liz Gilbert. She was on Pete Holmes, and also in her book Big Magic. She was talking about how she talks to fear. Fear is one of her demons. And she says, every day I have to talk to my fear. Now, there's some people who, when you start talking about this kind of language, they talk about, like, I need to destroy my fear. I need to slay it. You know, like, there's this guy, Steve Pressfield, who has a book called The War of Art. And he says, you know, we have to slay the voice in our head that tells us that we can't create. And that's fine. For some people, that works for them. For me, it's just too violent, right? And it feels a little schizophrenic. So what she does, and I love this exercise, is she says to her fear every day, hello, fear. I love you. You've kept me safe in times in my life where I needed to be kept safe. You protected me when I wasn't able to protect myself. But today, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write some things, and those words can't hurt me. So you can't be in charge today. Today, fear, you have to ride in the back seat. And that exercise for me has become so healthy to start naming my demons. And then to not beat them down, But because I've just learned in my experience, they don't go away. The things we struggle with, we always struggle with. Alcoholics are always alcoholics. That voice saying, numb your pain by drinking, is always going to be there. But I can banish it to the back seat. And so that's been a big deal for me in this journey over the last couple of months, is working on doing the work, good emotional mental health, of taking my demons, naming who they are, and saying, you know what, we better become friends because we're in this for a long time together. But you have to ride in the back seat. In the words of Liz Gilbert, you sure as heck don't get to touch the radio station, right? Like, so like that's huge. And so out of that, this poem just seems to keep intersecting with my life over the last couple months, or last couple weeks. It's just been the last 3 weeks, from Mary Oliver. This is just the first couple lines. She says, you do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about your despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. And the first couple lines there, I've memorized that part of the poem. It's a little bit longer than this. But you do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. Part of my unworthiness stuff is I feel like I always have to be performing for God so that he won't be angry and he won't be disappointed. And it's been a big journey for me of dealing with that. So 2 weeks ago, Dustin and I were up at a conference in Minneapolis, and we were with, we'll talk about this a little bit later, but we were with other churches like ours, and this song, one of the churches wrote this song, a church from Seattle called East Lake Community, I think, or East Lake Church. They wrote this song, and it's a really, here's the deal, is I probably hadn't, well, let me say two things. One is there was something about being in that space with those people that I will describe it as I did a really good job of not thinking about church stuff my whole sabbatical, except one Sunday when this church took to social media like crazy fools and my heart rate started raising. That was just 1 week. And then, but mostly I really tried to honor the spirit of it. And so being up there with Dustin in Minneapolis with those other churches was the spot in my sabbatical where I felt like I woke up and I wanted to come back. And I was excited to start coming back. And so we were up there, and these churches were, this church did this song. And this song just cut through me. And it was the first time in a long time that I sang again. And it had been a long time since I had sung a song. And maybe even more important than that, been moved by a song. So I'm going to introduce this song to you. I'll explain a little bit more when we're done. But you can listen, you can sing, you can just pay attention to the words, whatever you want. But this was just a really big deal of my sabbatical for me in terms of my journey and what I think God wants of me. We thought you wanted temples and blood above our doors. We thought you wanted vengeance and all-out holy wars. We thought that you were distant, you were far away. But you are here and you are love. We thought we'd have to prove ourselves to ever feel your love. We thought that blood and sacrifice would somehow be enough. We thought that you were angry, God. You were far away, but you are here and you are love. That part again, and you can join us if you want. We thought you wanted temples and blood above our doors. We thought you wanted vengeance and all out holy wars. We thought that you were distant, you were far away, but you are here and you.
somehow be enough. We thought that you were angry, God, but you were far away. But you are here and you are love. Hopeless, and heaven was the end. We thought your love could only reach a fraction of our friends. We thought we'd never make it, God. We were far away, but you are here and you are love. God, help us love our neighbors. Help us be a light. Help us see our differences without needing to be right. Keep us far from evil, God. Keep us far away, 'cause you are here and you are love. See our differences without needing to be right. Help us love our neighbors. Help us be a light. Help us see our differences without needing to be right. Help us love our neighbors. Help us be a light. Help us see our differences without needing to be right. Help us love our neighbors.
Of questions related to that. So I think in the first service, Janet, you said, was asking you about, I think, music and what that is or what that was for you during sabbatical.
Yeah.
And how you use music or not use music as a pathway.
Yeah, she was asking about, like, in my quiet spaces of being alone, how much I listen to music, and I don't much. For me, the pathway, Liz Gilbert says this. Oh, can you put up the ego quote? Can I start there? Like, Liz Gilbert in Big Magic talks about our ego, and she says, your ego is a wonderful servant, but it's a terrible master, because the only thing your ego ever wants is reward, reward, and more reward. And since there's never enough reward to satisfy, your ego will always be disappointed. And she goes on to say, good thing is we're not all just made up of an ego, but that at our core, we're a soul. And what our soul desires is wonder. And she talks about then for her, writing is her fastest pathway to wonder. And I responded to Janet by saying, for me, it's interesting. I've always loved music, but when it comes to worship music and spirituality in music, listening to it doesn't do it for me. It's when I put on the guitar and I actually play it. And one of the things I think I'm hoping that will change a little bit as I come back is that I just need to get more connected to the music again. I miss it. I miss my guitar. I miss sitting at the piano and playing. And last year during Lent, I actually led, a lot of you don't know this, we did a midweek service during Lent. It wasn't really well attended, but I led worship from the piano during Lent. And I just, there was something about that, that I don't care that there wasn't hardly anybody here. I was having a great time playing piano and worshiping because there's something in that to me that I know about myself, that my soul is full of wonder when I'm creating something. And sometimes that's food, or it's creating a sermon, or it's creating a song, or creating a blog post. That's my sweet spot when I'm creating things. And so, Well, I mean, it's a little bit historical, the idea of we thought you wanted temples and blood above our doors and vengeance and all holy wars, kind of the nod to crusade kind of thing, that we thought you wanted us to do these kinds of things for us. But the truth that I'm leaning into more and more is that God is here right now and he's love. And that I don't have to perform. I don't have to do this, this, and this to change God from angry to happy, but that he's just delighted in us. And I think that's just gorgeous throughout this song. That's the thing. And then the help us love our neighbors, help us be a light. Like, that's what I think the whole point of all this is how do we then help our neighbors? How do we be a light? And I love that line about help us see our differences without needing to be right. I think that's what this church has always been about, is help us to see the ways we disagree with each other and not have to be, oh, I'm great. No, I'm right. Let's, you know, like that. That to me is beautiful. And so it hit me personally, but then it also felt like, boy, this song was written for our church, you know, like, so that was, yeah. Yeah. So this is a church called Solomon's Porch in Minneapolis, Minnesota, which, by the way, who knew Minneapolis was like one of the coolest cities I've ever been in? I love that city. Super cool. This church, I adore. The Perez Lauterbachs are now going to this church. Those of you who know Dave and Sonia, they're going here. It's the pastor is a guy named Doug Padgett. I really love him. So basically, real quickly, we're not a denominational church, and there's this sense sometimes where I feel very, very alone, that we're a weird church. I know it. We think differently than a lot of other churches in our community, and that's nothing against them. It's just that we're different. And so there's a feeling of isolation and loneliness. I joke with somebody sometimes when they come in, like, I love everything about your church, and they're new. And I'm like, well, that's great, because we're your only option then. If you like us that much, you're not going to fit anywhere else, so you're kind of stuck here. And so to be in a room with 50 other pastors, leaders, who that is their experience as well. And I'd say Dustin and I made new friends, particularly with Highlands Church in Denver and Frontline Church in New York City and LaSalle Street Church in Chicago. Like, there's just some places where if you were to move to one of those cities, I will tell you the church you should go to right now. And so there's some interest among these kind of churches like ours in developing some kind of network that's not a denomination, but some kind of a partnership to say, because it happens to me all the time. People leave here and they're like, I'm moving to Minneapolis. Where do I go to church? You go to Solomon's Porch. If you love us, you'll love Solomon's Porch. We know that, you know, like, but to do more of that, because we're a very scattered network and we don't all know each other. And because a lot of these churches are this size and we're not mega churches. So it's it was really hopeful and fun to be a part of that. A little bit. You know, I've been sketching the Joseph Campbell stuff, the book I would love to write someday. I'm still, like, kind of working out the ideas, and the Joseph Campbell stuff was really huge and led me in a lot of, like, outlining there. Some of you follow my blog. I've been more consistent blogging, and I've fallen in love with it. You know, blogging has always been something I've done as kind of a chore, like I should. And it's been really fun. And for the first time ever, I have like 12 or 15 posts in my queue of like they're like a paragraph or a couple sentences of ideas, which I've never been that far out. So it's actually really fun now because I'm like, oh, yeah, I got to talk about this, you know. So I'm having a blast doing that. And so just exploring some of the other options. Good.
So questions from?
Oh, yeah. So the wake up part on the timeline was going up to this thing. And it was like, you know, it really was like a switch being turned. And it was, oh, by the way, it was hilarious because I decided to take Dustin with me. But then I told Dustin before we went, he couldn't talk about church at all. So, like, we can talk about church, but we can't talk about Imago Dei at all. I don't want to know anything. My sabbatical's not over. So it was really awkward because it was funny looking back now because we were having conversations up there about specific things that were going on here. And he's awesome at playing poker face, which is a little scary because he could totally lie to me and I'd never know. So that was really fun. Oh, yeah, so rumbling, Brené Brown talks about the process of recovering as you name what's inside of you. But then you go back, and her phrase, and it's been a big, it's how I talk now all the time, driving Jennifer nuts with it, but is we all tell ourselves a story. So instead of saying, you hurt me, say, the story I'm telling myself is that you're blowing me off and you want nothing. Like, there's an internal, like, owning of my emotions. But then the rumble is where we explore those things. Because sometimes the story we're telling ourselves about the world around us, it actually is the story. People really don't like us, you know? But more often, the story we're telling ourselves isn't reality. The story we tell ourselves is our version of events, where nobody's talking to me. You know what? Nobody notices you because they're not paying attention. You know, like, get over yourself. So the rumble in Rising Strong is really about that process of going back into our stories and examining them and wrestling with them and paying attention, what she calls about being curious, just getting really intensely curious about myself and what's going on inside of me. Yeah. Thank you. That's good.
Other questions?
Yeah. I was going to say that at the end. We actually did that last service. Basically, next week, we're going to just follow the lectionary throughout the end, I think through the end of the year. I haven't looked at the Advent calendar yet, but I'm pretty sure we're going to follow the lectionary out through the end of the year, probably in January, pick up the John thing and start trudging through John that we're six chapters into. Yeah. You know, that's a good question, Derek. I don't know that I even knew what to expect, and I wouldn't have known on the front side. I didn't have enough in me to know that I was agitated. I don't know that I knew what I needed. Yeah, whoa, that's a good sentence. I don't know that I knew what I needed at the time, but what I experienced was what I needed. Oh, I don't know that I knew what I needed, but what I got was what I actually needed. Ah, yes, I know. Yeah, right. Yeah, so, I mean, that's the way I'd say it, is I just feel really good right now. I feel really good about where I am and where life is, and not that the demons have quieted. You know, the monkey brain never quiets down. It's funny when people are encountering disciplines of silence and solitude the first time. Almost every one of us that does that says something like, well, my mind's really active. Do you know what the Dalai Lama would say? His mind's really active. It is everybody's experience. Some people aren't just born to meditate better than others. No, they've just learned how to quiet the monkey mind. And so, boy, that's huge for all of us. Like, we all have those things. And so to get quiet enough to deal with that, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, so I had a sabbatical as well.
Yeah, that's a good question. Because of some choices I made, some of it just kind of the wear and tear of ministry over the years. We always joke on somebody before between services. I've only had one other sabbatical, and it was called a severance package. And that's not the same feel as a sabbatical. When you have two young children and you're living in a house that the church that just fired you owns, it's really uncomfortable. So some of it choices I made, some of it the wear and tear of a lot of years in the ministry, some of it personality, some of it a lot of things. The best way I know to describe myself 4 months ago is that good relational health for all of us is that we have boundaries. And think of the boundaries as a shield out here. And so that when things happen and stuff is said and just life happens, good boundaries, we're able to deflect the stuff that we're like, yeah, that's just your junk, not mine. And let through the things we actually should let through. I would have said 4 months ago, I think I said this to Eric this week, is that I feel like 4 months ago, my boundaries were gone, and I was just taking body shots. And everything anybody said about anything was going straight to my heart, and it hurt. And I just didn't have in me what I needed to do my job well and be confident. And so mostly, and this, I don't mean this in an arrogant way, but I feel confident. Like, I feel like I love this church, and I feel like I know what this church is about. And it's been muddy at times, and I've let that stuff, circumstances and other things, and I've sat back and not said the things probably I should have and led. And it feels like I just want to lead again. I just have an energy and a confidence about things. And I don't know how else to say that. And so that, maybe that's one thing. I mean, I told First Service, it's weird being up here in front of you all. And it was funny, Eric walked away at First Service, and I felt like really exposed all of a sudden. Like, I'm up here by myself in front of you all. It feels really weird. And I don't know how to describe that feeling for you when I'm up here all the time. You'd think you'd just get immune to it. And then being away for 3 months, it feels awkward sitting here a little bit. And so there's just, and I think what you said, there'll be an ongoing, like, process. And I don't think that the answer is out for the church. I mean, the leadership team and I will discuss some things and process through, like, was this good and what, you know, all those kinds of things. But the answer to, like, what is the long-term effect on the church, I think, is 2-3 years out. What happened and where did it go from there? So that's a really good question. Thank you. Yeah, I said to the last service, like, I'm talking about boundaries being up. I'm pretty comfortable if I don't want to talk about something, I'll just politely tell you I don't want to talk about it. But you're free to ask whatever you want. And so if there's something I said today or something you heard about, email me, call me, you know, whatever. Let's go sit and talk, because I'll process as much as I can, and I'll be responsible enough to have the kind of boundaries that says, no, that's kind of personal and I shouldn't talk about that here. I should, because I think sometimes, like, people think, oh, I don't want to, he's fragile. And so I don't want to ask, you know, like, it's okay. Just ask. It's all right. You know, I had somebody ask me a really hard question Wednesday night, and I tried to answer as truthful as I can. And I also said, like, I don't know. As long as you're okay with me doing this sometimes. Just ask, and let's hang out.
Laura, thank you. So, with the transforming setup that you started a while back, and yeah, you have this incredible experience in the most changing. But just going there, going inward. The inward journey is difficult. It's very difficult. It's hard. And he had just 3 months of that. And so, thank you for putting that in. It's going to unfold, and it's going to spill out onto us as a huge, huge blessing. So, thank you. Certainly need for it.